how has living in or having contact with rural Maine affected you, do you think? As opposed to where you lived in a, more of a city
at one point. Well, I lived in a city. It was, Bangor was a lot different than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
I used to walk. I went to Bangor High School. I went to the Abraham Lincoln Grammar School. And then to high school, just walked down over the big State Street Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
now it's out on Essex Street, the big...
Right. Yeah. Did Bangor feel like... Does it feel like more of a city now than it did then, like more urban? Yes.
I wouldn't want to live there now. I think it's too busy now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So was there, where Bangor was more of a city as opposed, in comparison with a place like Orrington, was there still farming that went on in Bangor, or was it more of a business type area?
Well, I think Bangor still had farms on the outer limits.
The outer parts, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So, did you have a favorite place that you liked living? Like, did you prefer living in more of the area where you'd walk to school, or at Abraham Lincoln or something like that, where it was a little bit more of the city feel? Did you like them both?
Oh, well, I like the country. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And when we used to come to Orrington Corner, out to, my folks lived out there at the corner. And, you know, when they moved from Bangor back to Orrington. And I used, until I was a junior in high school, I used to live with my sister up on Ohio Street in Bangor. And then I came to Orrington in the summers, and that's when I met my husband.
Oh, okay, that's cool. So, was it a big transition for you when you did move, when you lived with your husband in the country, and it was more of a farming type atmosphere and rural? Was that hard to adjust to, or did you
enjoy
it?
Well, I tell you one thing, I didn't know how to cook. I came from I had sisters and one brother. But I didn't do any of the cooking. I did dishes. My sister and I used to argue over whose turn it was to do dishes. So my husband's mother had lost her husband. He was assassinated. He was killed. I don't know if anybody ever told you about it or not, but anyway. They had a hired man that came from up to the state hospital. And he came, and he was, all of a sudden, I guess he just flipped. Hmm. And he, they were getting ready to go to a parade, and he shot my husband's father, and then he shot one more. It went through the wrist of his sister that was sitting in the front row. She had a little baby in her lap. And it's just a wonder he hadn't shot them all. But then he just took off, and then they found him later on. Locked him up.
Hmm. Wow. That's a... That must have been
when
different.
I met Raymond, he used to drive a motorcycle. He used to ride a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said he had his father's car, and he said, I was friends with Janice and Lydia Glidden and different ones that lived there at the corner. And out Orrington Corner. And he said, would you like to go for a ride? And we said, sure. And he said, he pointed at me, and he said, you sit in the front seat. And I said, okay. But anyway.
And that's how it all started, huh?
That's when it started, yes.
That's cool. So living in the country, were there different activities and groups that you became a part of when you came into the country? Like, I know a lot of the time the atmosphere is sort of different, the community feel. Did you sense a difference in that? Like, is there...
Well, I joined the Grange.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to the Rebecca's. That was another thing I belonged to that I went to.
So, the Rebecca's, is that sort of a club?
Oh, it's a... Well, I... say about the Rebecca's. It's part of the they're building now is a church or something out there. But I can't explain it too much, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So my dad mentioned that, because obviously you were friends with my grandmother.
Oh, yes. So. Oh, Carolyn. Good friends with Carolyn.
Yeah. So
she was a sweetheart.
Yeah, she was. So yeah. He was telling me how you did, like, the Grange together.
Yeah.
And he mentioned Ladies' Aid dinners.
Oh, yes.
Is that something you did
church,
together?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's the Methodist Church, yes.
Right.
Wait on that.
Can you tell me a little bit about that, like what those Ladies' Aid dinners were like?
Well, they had. We used to serve baked beans and salads and pies. And
my dad mentioned it, was it every Thursday?
Like yes, pretty often? I think it was on Thursdays, yes.
That's pretty cool. Did a lot of people from the community come?
Oh, yes, they used to.
All the time?
But they don't. People don't go to things now like they used to.
Yeah. So that reminds me, the whole community getting together thing kind of reminds me of the Grange.
Oh, yes.
So what would you say, what do you miss most about that time where a place like the Grange would be prominent, like the community and all that?
Well, I miss all the social, you know, seeing the people and
mm-hmm.
socializing with them.
Yeah. What type of things happened at the Grange? Like, what type of activities were there?
Well, we put on suppers, and then there was Old Home Week, used to be in Arlington. We used to have Old Home Week,
mm-hmm.
and they used to put on a fair, you know, like they had tables and sold things. And
mm-hmm. So, do you have a favorite memory from the Grange? Like an event that was particularly special, or you had a good time, or... I know there's a lot of events, so it might be hard to pick one, but...
Well, I don't know. I enjoyed going to Grange. That's all I know.
Yeah.
I enjoyed working on the meals, you know, the suppers that we put on and seeing all the people and everything.
Did they have dances at the Grange?
I can't remember. All I know is that I was in a... it was during Old Home Week, and we had a, what they called, when Nashville comes to Arlington, and we filled that Grange Hall two nights in a row.
Huh. So what did you say it was called? Nashville?
Nashville comes to Arlington, and
Nashville.
We sang.
Oh, Nashville. Oh, okay.
Nashville.
Oh, okay.
We sang all the country western songs.
Oh, yeah.
And had... Al Mallory. Do you know Al Mallory? Well, anyway,
the name sounds familiar.
He played a guitar in the background. We had several fellows up on the stage. And I was Minnie Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And I came out and said, "Hi, I'm so glad to be here." And at my age, I'm back glad to be anywhere. You know, then I did a little spiel.
Ooh.
And I sang a little song. And I was one of the... They had two... I sat on one end of the... on the stage, and this other lady sat on the other side during the program.
Yeah, that's cool. So, let's see, what are there? Are there people in your life that distinctly stand out when you think of rural Maine?
Well, I met my husband, and he was a farmer. He didn't care for farming too good, much, but and he. Besides that, he was a deputy sheriff. All besides that, worked for the sheriff department too, and he worked with the Arlington Post Office. He worked with Wendell.
Mm-hmm.
They worked again. Wendell got him a job out there. He used to deliver mail.
So that's cool. So. What is your favorite? What would you say is, throughout your life, has been your favorite outdoor Maine activity?
Outdoor?
Yeah.
I don't know. I like to be outside. I like the when I can go for walks.
Mm-hmm.
And see the birds. And once in a while you see a deer.
Yeah. I love that whenever I'm arriving back at home and there's deer in the field. So living on a farm, can you just describe to me what a day on the farm would be like, just kind of your average day?
Got up real early in the morning, and they had to milk the cows.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the memories I have is going and driving the cows back up to the barn. They were down in the fields, and the men, some of the men sitting there on the fence and just smiling, watching you go doing, go get the cows.
Yeah.
And I used to make butter. We sold heavy cream, and then people started watching their diets, so they didn't buy as much. Mother-in-law, my husband's mother, she used to deliver cream to Herrick's store, different stores there in Bangor. And then people started watching their diets, and the cream business just went whoop. So they sold the cows.
You sold apples, too.
Oh, yeah, we sold. Yeah, good thing you're here, Jerry. Yes, we I picked a lot of apples, and we sold apples right at the house. McIntosh and Cortland's and Bellflowers and Spies. And I picked a lot of apples in my days, up and down the ladder. And
so did you have like a whole row of apple trees or something at the farm?
Oh, yes,
like
we had a lot of them up there. Mm-hmm. There's still a few.
I think I've seen those before.
There was a lot of them, but then it's all fields there now, but we did have a lot of apple trees.
Was there, because your farm was pretty big, I take it. I haven't seen that much, but was there a favorite place for you? Because I noticed just driving through how beautiful the area is.
Yes.
Was there a favorite place for you of maybe somewhere you'd like to just go and sit and admire the view or anything like that?
Oh, yes, I used to go up, I used to take long walks up through the fields and sit down, watch the birds, and look for deer, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, how many people were, did you have any extra help that was hired or anything at the farm, or was it family?
Yes, they did. They had a couple of the Bowden boys, Buddy Bowden, Wilfred, Buddy Bowden used to help. And let's see. My husband was in the WW2, and when he went away, they had to have hired help there working. And my sister-in-law, Beulah, her husband, Clifford, used to come up and help with the farming.
So did any of the help live on the farm, or was it mostly people would come for the day and work?
No,
and then
they lived right next door. I mean, it used to be all relatives right there where we lived. The Bowdens, they were all relatives.
Yeah, that's similar to at my house with the, we all live like
right,
in the same area.
True. They are all around.
So yeah, I've noticed that about Orrington. So can you just, how a lot of the bigger families in Orrington all seem to live next to each other. Can you maybe describe to me what that experience has been like for you throughout your life, just having family so close all the time?
Well, it was wonderful, that's all, to have your relatives and everybody say, who lives near you? And I said, oh, I have a sister-in-law and another sister-in-law. I said, it's all, all family live all around there.
Mm-hmm. So, was it mostly your husband's side of the family that was living around, or did you have people on your side of the family too?
Husband's side, yes.
Just going to make sure we're still... Okay, good, we're still recording. Just want to make sure we didn't lose anything. So, why in your mind is keeping rural heritage alive? Why is that so important, do you think, Tiki?
Well, you know, right now, I only have one sister out of the. I had two older sisters and one brother, and they have passed away, and I have one sister, Glennis Sawyer, And she lives right, as you go out that long driveway, you go up there, and she lives up in there. Everett, her husband's Everett, he built a beautiful, well, I don't know if you'd call it log cabin or not, but anyway, he built a beautiful place up there. Mm-hmm. She's 6 years younger than I. But I don't see her very often.
Mm-hmm.
She comes, she and, she lost, Everett lost, he was, went hunting, sat down under a tree, and that was it. Passed away. He didn't suffer or anything.
Huh. Wow. So, what would you say is the difference in, when we're talking about rural life versus, because even, I feel like even now, I mean, technically I live in a rural place because I live in, out around here in Orrington, right. But it's kind of a different experience because of where technology is now, and you know, people are. Right. So, what would you say? Is there anything that you feel sad that, for instance, my generation may have lost in terms of the feel of community or the feel of life?
I'll tell you one thing: there used to be every other place was a farm. Mm-hmm. And there's only one farm left now, Jimmy Howard.
Mm-hmm.
That's just that one farm left. Out of, used to be a lot of farms,
mm-hmm.
but no more.
Yeah, so is there anything that you think living on a farm, is there anything, any life skills or lessons or things that you think that you've gained from being on a farm that other people have missed out on from not living that rural life?
I learned how to cook, and I learned how to make butter, and I learned, you know, I learned a lot of things on, and I loved it, I really did, but my Jerry couldn't. He could. I'll be so glad when I leave this place, he'd say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then what did he do? We moved back, and he loves it.
Yeah.
But Peter is my son. Peter lives in Florida in the winter. And he has a place next door here, just a summer place. And my daughter lives in New Hampshire, and she married a fellow from Brewer, and they live in New Hampshire. They wouldn't come back here for anything.
Mm-hmm.
They love it where they are.
So in other words, it just kind of depends on the personality of someone, whether they enjoy the rural life or not.
Right. Some people like living in the country, and other people say, oh, you know, I don't see how you stand it to be out there. I said, well, I just love it.
Yeah. So, what is it? Okay, so actually I have an initial question first. Have you traveled in your life very much around?
Yes, I've been to Hawaii 15 times.
Hawaii? 15 yeah. times? Wow. So, have you been?
And I have, my husband and I used to, we had a small Scotty trailer, and we used to go to Canada and a lot of, you know, went a lot of places. We used to go down to, where Carolyn Wendell used to go down.
Seawall?
Down Seawall, down those places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Take our trailers and have fun with all the people.
Yeah.
Play cards a lot.
Yeah. So, so you've been to Hawaii, obviously, a lot.
Yeah.
Are there any other states that you have... Have you been to many other states?
Yes, when we... I had it in my diary that we went to... I had all the different states that we wrote it all down.
Mm-hmm.
And we would stay one night in that place and go on and stay. It didn't stay any long times.
Right.
But my husband... He liked to move on, keep moving.
Yeah.
But we saw a lot of the United States.
Going around like that.
Practically all of them.
Oh, wow. And what about traveling outside of the country? Have you traveled to any other countries?
No, just it's Hawaii is really the only place I've...
I'm trying to think. You went on a cruise.
I went on a cruise.
But I don't remember where you went.
So...
but basically Hawaii is her thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mom and Dad loved Hawaii.
Yeah. Seems like a pretty cool place.
And they had some, see what happened is they didn't have enough, we didn't grow up, we didn't have an awful lot of money, but then they sold off some lots down here.
Mm-hmm.
So Dad had a little bit of money. So he decided, boy, he was going to do the things that he wanted to do, and Mom. So that Hawaii became a big part of, you know, every year they would really look forward. How many years did you go? Like 14?
I said about 15.
Yeah, 14, 15 years.
I think.
Yep.
So clearly you've seen a lot of different places and a lot of different things.
Oh,
and
that's right.
So.
But I was always glad to get back home.
Yeah, and that was my next question. So it's like, you've seen all these different places, and yet you've always just felt drawn to Maine.
Right.
Would you say that's right?
Oh,
so
yes.
So what is it about Maine, do you think, and the life we live here that differentiates in it from other places and makes you want to live here?
Yeah, I don't know. All I know is everyone is very friendly.
Mm-hmm.
I think Maine people are very friendly people.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I actually met a guy he was from New York City, and he was like, everyone is so nice here. And he's like, and they're not just nice to get something out of you.
Right, no.
You know,
they're
like
just
he's
nice
saying,
people, right?
He was saying in New York City, people are nice to you, but it's because they're trying to get something from you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's really unique about Maine. And so even beyond Maine, so your husband fought in World War II.
Yes,
and,
he did.
So
he was very fortunate to get back home.
Yeah, and I've heard that my dad was telling me he's had the most interviews at the Coal Transportation Museum or something.
Museum.
Yeah.
And you know, he didn't talk anything about what happened to him in the war or anything. But if you wanted to find out anything, you'd have to go in and sit down in the background while he was being interviewed by the young people.
Uh-huh. So
and that's the way we found out.
You did that thing at Kohl's. I don't know if you know about it.
Yeah. I actually did that once when I was in middle school. They brought us in and we interviewed
right.
veterans.
I mean,
that was
so
pretty cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a great place over there.
So,
were you saying that he wouldn't really talk to adults about it, but if kids were interviewing him, would.
Oh yes.
He never talked to us growing up.
Never.
It was never mentioned. All you know, he's at Guadalcanal. Some horrible things happened over there. Never mentioned the war. It was like it never existed.
Mm.
And then, and as he got older, then next thing you know, he's up there telling. All kind of, he never talked about it with adults or anybody. He might have if he met some old buddies or something.
Mm-hmm.
But not around us, around the family. We never heard a thing.
Huh.
Never mentioned anything about the war. And also, like, Florida, you talk about visiting. He said, yeah, I was in Florida once, and that was enough for me. He didn't want to go to Florida in the wintertime.
Oh, yeah.
He just loved it right here. The time he was in Florida was in when he was, like, 21 years old, and he went to, going to camp, but getting ready for the war, Camp Blanding. And it was like July, and he's used up here in Maine, and it was hot, and he just had a really bad experience in training camp, you know.
Yeah. So.
In the Army.
So I'm sure, especially with the way he served in World War II, I'm sure that this is for both of you a question. I'm sure that you guys have a great appreciation for the United States and how fortunate we are to be here. And I'm afraid sometimes just in my generation, we're losing the sense of nationalism that is so strong in your generation and in your generation. And do you see that happening at all?
Oh, absolutely. As a teacher, I mean, I taught school for 35 years and I see a big change. I always, and we just say thank you for your service. Doesn't matter what's, you know, whether it was World War II, there's not too many left, Vietnam, Galen Cole has given them a good sense of, you know, they were asked to serve their country, and there were a lot of people that really hated that war and turned that hate on the soldiers when they came back.
Mm.
And now the soldiers are people are starting to realize these people are the ones that are keeping us free, especially World War II. we'd all be speaking German or Japanese right now if it wasn't for those guys.
Yeah.
So, no, we, there is, a lot of these kids don't realize today what people went through so that they are free.
Yeah.
And some of them do, like yourself. Now, how old are you?
I'm 18.
18, yeah. And you're a senior at Brewer?
John Babst.
John Babst, yeah.
Yeah, so I remember even when I was back in middle school, some people wouldn't even stand for the Pledge of Allegiance or anything.
Boy, I'll tell you what. No, I demanded that in my class. I mean, that kid went right to the principal, and the principal backed me up on that. Did the teachers push it or anything?
Well, sort of, but...
Well, you have Jehovah's Witnesses and stuff. You don't have to say anything, but at least stand up. We had kids that would, you know, at least you had to stand up. But I know isn't that...
Oh, it's just sad. And so, between both of you, I'm wondering, what would you have as a message for those kids that don't realize, speaking as the son of and the wife of someone who fought in World War II, for example, what message would you have for those kids in my generation about what it means to you to live in America?
I would say that people died for that freedom that you have so that you can worship if you choose, travel where you want to. That freedom comes from people that fought and died for you. And yet you're not willing to even stand and pledge allegiance to a place that has all these freedoms because of those people that, all the way back through your whole country, back hundreds of years, these people have fought for this freedom, and now you've got the freedom, and you're not going to pledge your allegiance to this country that is free.
I've noticed on TV sometimes when they're playing the Star Spangled Banner, you know, half of them aren't even, you know, they aren't even paying attention. They
don't take their hats off. I noticed that in the Super Bowl yesterday.
Mm.
They're playing the national anthem, not the Super Bowl, but the playoff. And a lot of people were not taking their hats off.
They didn't take that.
Yeah.
Respect thing, which is, it comes from the home.
Yeah.
It's how you're taught at home.
For sure. I've noticed that when I go to a hockey game or something for my school, a lot of the kids are pretty good about it and will stand and listen to the national anthem and look at the flag and take off their hats and stuff. But the hats are something I've noticed. And then there's some kids that can't take that, whatever it is, a minute and a half, maybe 90 seconds to just reflect on how fortunate they are. And they're laughing and talking with their friends. Even, yeah.
Not that, I think maybe it's getting worse. I don't know. I work the basketball tournaments, and I look around up there at the Cross Center, and most of the people that are taking that, you know, that are coming down to watch those basketball games, high school basketball games, are taking their hats off. And in fact, as ushers, we'll look around if we see some with a hat on.
Yeah, take it off. Yeah.
And they will, usually, because they're in a school, they're in a setting where the principal's around or somebody's around. Some of them don't want them, but they do it anyway.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, it's a challenge.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see, I've actually asked most of the questions on my list. So, what would an evening on the farm be like? Like, after... For instance, after dark, when the day's work had been done and you're all together as a family, what would that be like?
Well, we played a lot of card games, you know, card games like that. We didn't have television until Grammy Perkins had an apartment for her upstairs, and she had a television, and the kids used to go upstairs and listen to television with Grammy. But before television, we just used to play a lot of cards and so, you know, that was what you were, good games played. What was the one we played with marbles there? Anyway, that's what we used to do in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
Just probably went to bed early.
Played board games, card games, Canaster and Scrabble.
That's what I said, Scrabble and different ones. But I mean, we went to bed early because we get up early.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was on the farm. You were up by 5, probably went to bed by 8:30 or 9. That was late.
Yeah. So, before you did have a television in your home, did you, was radio?
Radio.
Did you listen to the radio often?
Radio. Well, I can see my father now sitting inside it, listen to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
But I never listened to the radio very much.
You had records, too, those big 78 RPM records, you know, the
thing. Oh, yeah.
Remember you used to play the record player?
Oh, yeah. Phonograph record, yeah. I've got stacks of...
Stacks of records.
Of songs, yeah.
Did you
have... I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I ought to sell them, but nobody seems to want them.
I would take something like that, to be honest. Those are cool, but... Yeah. Did you have a favorite artist or, like music group that you like to listen to on the records?
Oh. I like to listen to a lot of them. And right now, nothing will come to me.
That's okay.
Perry Como.
Perry Como, yeah.
Frank Sinatra. Right. But there was a lot of country western songs, country western fellows. I can't think of them. Jerry has them on his big television once in a while. The old ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I like Frank Sinatra a lot, too. I like that. Yeah. So did you like kind of that? You like the country western music?
Oh, yes.
And the sort of jazzy...
Yes.
Swing type music too.
Uh-huh.
So, were you a dancer? Did you like to dance a lot?
I used to go square dancing. We used to out the Grange Hall, square dancing. But I never was a dancer. Square dancing I like, but I never was. Did a lot of it. No.
So square dances at the Grange, was that like a? When there was a square dance, was that a big event that a lot of people would go to? And
yeah, we used to have good turnouts in those days at the Grange.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people.
So
it was fun.
Yeah,
it was mostly all Arrington people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, once in a while you get someone Bank or Brewer, but I mean mostly Arrington people.
So what was the atmosphere like at a square dance?
Like, just fun.
Fun. Like, everyone's really lively. And
yes, people...
Was there live music?
Enjoying themselves.
Live music that you were dancing to?
Yeah, live music, yes. You have to have someone playing a violin and a guitar and drums and really enjoyed that.
So, I think I sort of touched on this earlier, but things like that happened at the Grange Hall, what do you think... How much do you think that my generation or people a little bit older than me that just didn't really have the chance to experience the Grange
right.
life, like, how much do you think we're missing out on? Like, do you wish that was still around, or?
Well, I think there's still, the Grange is still there. I don't know how many people they get.
Yeah, it's kind of smaller now.
Yes, it used to be... used to be, you know, that's where you went. You went to the Grange, I don't know. I haven't been there for so long that I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think they usually get more than 10 or 15 people at an event anymore. They don't have the dances or anything anymore. No. I remember
Used to be at Old Home Week. That used to be a big event in Arrington. All the different churches and the places would all... have the fairs, they would have tables and sell things, and those used to be fun.
Yeah. I know I've talked about that a little bit with my friends from school and everything, how we kind of wish that Orrington still, that like the Grange was still what it used to be in terms of everyone going.
Right,
and
right.
I feel like people are affiliated to other things now, like people a lot of the time will do events like that through their social groups or even through their schools, and
right.
like families are more tied to schools and stuff now rather than the community of Orrington. So that must have been pretty unique to, even though a lot of people were... Well, actually, okay, here's another question. How often, once you were living in Orrington on the farm, uh-huh. How often would you leave to go to a place like Bangor? Because I know, for instance, I go to school in Bangor every day. Like, that, I just travel back and forth every day, but...
We used to go to Bangor, get groceries. I don't know how often I went to Bangor, but we used to go up to get groceries. Of course, as Jerry knows, growing up, he didn't have a lot of... We had everything that came off the farm.
We basically lived off the farm.
Yeah.
And we grew everything we ate. We had milk from the cows. We had pigs, chickens. You know, I mean, we didn't get too
many.
We had
pigs and chickens and...
We had to go up and buy some peanut butter and salt and pepper and...
Don't you remember, Jerry, you said, boy, when I get off on this, I'll be so glad when I get off this farm.
I didn't appreciate all the work that I did, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. But I was getting up early in the morning and shoveling common ore and working on the hay farm all summer, and while my buddies were all having a good time. You know, I mean, we worked, the Bowdens and the Perkinses worked much of the summer. All the boys would get together with the other farm, you know, we'd all work together in a cooperation, helping each other fill their barns with hay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it took and then you think about the gardens, weeding the garden, harvesting the gardens, because that's what we had all winter. And then we had our apple crops.
Uh-huh.
So the potatoes, we had big fields of potatoes, dug all of our potatoes, kept them down cellar, a root cellar. Yeah.
So I'm actually, I have a question for you, so I'm going to bring this over so it's closer to make sure we hear. So you mentioned how living on a farm was a really good thing for you in retrospect now looking back. So what, for your friends who didn't have the experience of living and working on a farm as a kid, what life skills and... do you think that you gained that perhaps your friends who didn't have that experience didn't?
That's a tremendous question. The farm taught me the value of hard work. And it actually got me into, I ended up going up to Brewer High School and playing football at Brewer just to get, you know, so I wouldn't have to come home so early after school and work. My dad was not particularly crazy about that, but I did it. And I ended up, because I was in pretty good shape from working on the farm, it helped me a lot as far as football. And also, in order to play sports, you had to do well in school. So I worked to stay in school. I worked hard in school. And then I think the biggest thing that I got from the farm is learning the value of hard work, because these other people that are whining about different things that they're doing on the football field and how hard it was, I found it easy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, where I came from, you know, getting up early, working that farm, and then going to school, coming home and working, and it was physical, it was manual labor, it was, I mean, I complained about it, but it was the biggest reason that I've done what I've done in my life. I ended up realizing how important sports were to a person. You should have both sports and a good education in high school, but sports gives you more of a well-rounded background. And then going to Maine, the only reason I went to Maine is to play football.
Mm-hmm.
So
it kind of changed.
Which is not a real good reason, but football took me on into going to the University of Maine, getting a college education, which nobody in my family had ever gotten. Mm-hmm. I was the first person in the Perkins family to get a college education. And then I realizing what sports had done for me, I decided I wanted to become a coach.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into coaching and teaching, and I love teaching. And I did it for 35 years. And everything goes directly back to the work that I did on the farm. And realizing that hard work leads to this, this, and this. And you don't get things without... I went to college. The only thing my dad could afford was to give me a dollar for a haircut. We didn't have much. You know, once a month, I got a dollar for a haircut. The other money that I got was from a scholarship up at the University of Maine.
Mm-hmm.
The coach up there got me scholarship money to play football. Hadn't been for that, I wouldn't have been able to get a college education because I couldn't afford it. So it was like a circuit there, realizing, looking back, hard work led to this, this, and this. And then I saw, as I coached, I saw what sports did for other kids. It kept them in school. I had kids that were ready to, you know, they're raising the devil in school. Didn't care about sports, but I got them involved, and I coached football and wrestling. And a lot of those kids turned their life around because of being involved in sports, because they found a purpose, they found something that they felt good about themselves, and they had to do well in school in order to be on the sports program. Yeah. So coaching, teaching is just, I just loved it.
It's cool.
Yeah, and I love being back here on the old farm, and I realize so much all the value that I got from the work that I just appreciate this whole place so much more. I could hardly wait to get away, and then after working for 35 years, I could hardly wait to get back.
Yeah, so I was wondering, was there a certain moment for you where you just kind of hit you and you're like, wow, this I really owe a lot of what I've been able to accomplish to the basics that I learned working on the farm? Was there like a certain moment, or did it develop?
But it was, well, for one thing, I was fortunate enough to marry a wonderful lady who put up with me for 45 years. I lost her to cancer a few years back. But she was so tolerant of me and supportive. And she taught too. And we both decided that we wanted to, when we retired, at a point in our life, we just decided we'd get back over here to the farm. So we built a retirement home and got back here I've been retired for quite a few years now. And a certain moment, no, but I can remember when I was working and teaching, as a school teacher, to make ends meet, I taught, I coached, and I also worked outside jobs to make ends meet, because teachers don't make an awful lot of money at that point in time anyway. And but I loved it so much. I mean, I would have coached for nothing at all, because I loved it that much. But when I got done, I just decided, hey, I'm ready to go back home and enjoy the farm. And we've still got about 350 acres here. I love walking around here. You can walk all day and still be on Perkins property.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back at those years. I've got tremendous memories now of things that I did then, and I thought it was, drudgery, and it was some of the best times of my life.
Mm.
Had cousins, the Bowdens, that we played with all the time. They grew up on a farm. And so as a child, we were always outside. We weren't inside watching television, working on these little computers and Game Boys and all that stuff. We were outside running around,
mm-hmm.
Playing. And I look back on that, and that shaped my life, and it was a wonderful experience. I was very fortunate.
Yeah.
Very blessed. And having Mom back yet, I mean, that's been just amazing. There's not too many people that still have their mom. 92 years old. She just recently got
what?
At her birthday.
92.
Yeah, 92. So I kind of rambled around there, but.
Well, no, it was a great answer. So, you mentioned how technology is like less time is spent outside a lot of the time by the younger generation.
Just a second. Honey, let me give you a call in a little while. We're still doing the interview. Okay? Okay, bye-bye. What you're talking about there is really important to me. See, I see, I've got a girlfriend, a younger girlfriend. She's got kids. And I see the, and they play in sports. The oldest is 14 years old. And he's a good athlete and everything, but he is playing on these things, doing the games on TV, you know, Grand Theft Auto and stuff that I can't even imagine that your parents would probably even let you have. But also just on a computer all the time, texting. And I just see kids that are not getting out like they should. Fortunately, he's doing sports and everything, but he's not. I also see kids not interacting face to face. They're doing the texting with people, and I think that's going to really. I think when you talk to people face to face, you get a lot. You learn about life a lot more than you do just looking at one of these things. I mean, I do texting. I do all that stuff. Mom, it just amazes her and it baffles her, and it, you know. But there's so many people, young kids, if they don't have the direction at home, that are getting into, there's all kinds of stuff, there's games on the computers, so they can spend hours and hours and hours just chasing things around on computer screens. And it's too bad. Now, do you play any sports at all? Are you in a band at all? Because to me, those are...
Yeah, currently I do. I've done tennis every year. I did basketball my freshman and sophomore year, but I do theater.
See those? That's what I'm talking about.
So I've been more involved. Like I did a lot of sports growing up, and then now it's like I still do some sports, but I do more.
But you do scouts
and scouts and
now, Logan was doing scouts and he was going it up through, and now all of a sudden he's lost interest in it. And I did scouts. I went all the way up through Explorer and right into high school with Troop 44 and got Order of the Arrow and went to Camp Roosevelt and loved that stuff. And then all of a sudden I got involved in football and girls. And some things took a side, you know, took a sidetrack there. But scouts, I think Scouts is a great organization, and you can do as we used to have. I mean, they used to come down here. I don't know if your dad or anybody told you, but they used to come down here and they'd camp right down, right over here.
Oh yeah.
And they'd go across to the ice, and there's a Bowden's Island over there, and they would camp over there. The Boy Scouts would camp over there.
That's cool.
And because you know what it is, it's all about leadership and who you got for the leaders. I don't know who you are. We had some guys like Buddy Bowden. Let's see, it was a Bradstreet. I can't remember. There was two or three there that would, you know, that takes quite a lot of time for dads to go out and go away for a weekend to a camp out or a camporee or a camporam. I went to a national jamboree.
Oh, really?
Did you ever go to a jamboree?
I haven't gone to one, no.
Yeah, I went to a jamboree, and I mean, I'd never been out of the state of Maine. I was, I don't know, about 12 or something like that, and went to a national jamboree down in Washington, Valley Forge, 1957. Well, I've still got a bunch of the, I wonder if those are worth anything. I've got a whole bunch of things from.
Oh yeah, they probably are.
That I'm serious, that I traded with kids from all over the country that came to that national jamboree.
Yeah, I think patches can, depending on when they're from, they can be worth quite a bit of money.
Yeah. Well, check out sometime, 1957.
That's cool, yeah.
57, 67, 77, 77, 77, 77. Almost 60 years old, some of those patches. That was a long time ago.
So, I actually just thought of another question. When you were growing up, I've had the experience of when I'm growing up, I've seen a progression of technology with the internet and everything, and you know, like I've just grown up in a time where you can text your friends all the time if you want to hang out or anything like that, or if you just want to talk. And so I'm wondering, when you were growing up, what was it like? Like I can be in almost constant contact with my friends at this point. I can like we said with the FaceTime, if I wanted to, I could see their face just like this, even no matter where they are. I can say, hey, do you want to come over? And they can come over in minutes. And like, so what was your experience like in communication with your friends as a kid when you were around my age? In terms of if you wanted to...
How did you get in touch with friends if you wanted to meet, like go downtown Bangor or meet in Arrington?
Telephone.
What type of telephones did they have then?
They had the kind on the wall.
Did they have the kind with a cord on it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen those.
Like the two-piece ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was it. And then it was, to get there was quite a challenge. Now, do you ever remember anything about horse and buggies or anything like that, Mom?
No, I think that's a little bit before my time.
Well, it was, remember, you were born in 1922.
All I know was,
had the horses here.
When you went down to Valley Forge, you went on the train
out of Bangor. Out of Bangor, right.
Which they don't have there anymore.
Right.
So...
We had trolley cars.
So you don't remember any sleigh rides or anything like that with horses? Sleigh rides?
No, I think there was a couple back along.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I've told you before, part of my memory has gone.
Yeah.
Some things I remember good, other things I don't remember.
So, what was... I know it's kind of hard to compare because I'm basically asking you to compare when you were a kid to when you had kids, but
right.
You went to school in Bangor,
right?
And you went to school in Orrington, right?
Orrington.
So, So, in terms of the when you were both in your elementary time, was there a distinct difference in the schools between a more rural community like Orrington compared to Bangor, like in the amount of kids that were there and or what types of things you learned? Like was education catered toward the rural living at all, or was it just kind of the same in both places?
Do you remember a one-room schoolhouse, or what type of schooling did you have, Mom? Do you remember?
Well, when I left Orrington, I was like 6 years old, I guess I was. I went to a little small school that's over there near where the post office is now. It used to be a little school there. But I mean...
Where was that, Orrington or Bangor you're talking about?
In Orrington, and then I went to Bangor.
Right.
Went to Bangor to schools. I went to Abraham Lincoln's Elm Street School for 3 years, and then Abraham Lincoln School until I was in eighth grade, graduated from there. Then went to Bangor High for 4 years, when it used to be downtown Bangor.
I went to the, I don't know if you ever heard of it, but it was called Burns Memorial, and it's where the Congregational Church is now in Arrington.
Huh.
Right there, there was no kindergarten, first of all.
Right.
And 1 through 6, so you had six different grades right in the same school. In that little small school, you had six different grades. And some of the teachers had like three different grades in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
And they had different books for the grades, or some would just share books. I can remember that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, this is... So do you remember a feeling? I know you would have been really like a really small child at this point, so it's hard to remember those things. But when you transitioned from going to school in Orrington as a 6 year old to when you moved to Bangor, was there a big difference in the way that the school functioned?
Well, it was kind of scary when you get to when you went to the city school. You know, I was never very outgoing, so I kind of held back.
Mom was bashful.
Oh, yeah.
But I...
And I was bashful.
I did graduate. I've got a picture somewhere of my eighth grade class, and it's big.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
that was the biggest thing I found, going from Orrington, 8th grade in Orrington, which was, I went to 7th and 8th grade at North Orrington. It's a church now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Right on Route 15 there. And actually, it was 7th and 8th grade was there. It might have been 6th, 7th, and 8th by the time I went there. Orrington did not have their own high school, I mean, elementary school, except for that. The Orrington Elementary School came 2 years after I left, the one where Jimmy White was the principal. But anyway, going to Brewer, we had just small classes of maybe 12, 13, 14, and then at Brewer, the classes, you go in there and you're just a number. I remember, like, my freshman class, I went from being, it was like over 30 kids in a class
mm-hmm.
at Brewer High School. In fact, it might even have been more than that. That was just, and then they had them sectioned in different sections, you know, like A, B, and C sections, because our class at Brewer, I think, was like a 200 and something kids. So yeah. You go from Orrington, where you got like in the whole 8th grade class, you had like 15 or 18 or something, to a 8th grade class, or to a freshman class, was over 200 kids there.
So yeah.
Quite a difference there.
Right.
And I didn't play any sports. There were no sports in Orrington whatsoever.
Hmm.
So the only reason I went out, I didn't even go up for any sports until I was a sophomore. I was just kind of, I got kicked out of school as a freshman for fighting. I mean, I needed some direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a kid damn me to go out for football. He said I was chicken.
Oh, yeah.
And so I didn't even know what a football was, to tell you the truth. I mean, really. And I went out as a sophomore. And went out for his position, and by the end of the year, played for Larry Mahaney. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but he's
yeah.
the one that Weber Oil, and he was the coach. And by the end of the year, I had beaten this kid out for his position. Huh. Didn't know anything about. But his name was Charlie Adams. He's still a really good friend of mine. Huh. And he's the one that he said, you know, everything you've got, Perk, is from me. Because I'm the reason you went out for football. So it's kind of interesting how
you...
Do
you remember when you were sent home from school because you were...
Fighting
or something.
Yeah.
And they said, give him something to do. And your father said, don't worry, I'll find plenty
yeah,
for
I'll
him
tell you
to
what,
do.
No, the parents, I worked that whole week in the woods besides work in the barn. And I knew from then on I never wanted to be kicked out of school again.
Mm-hmm. So...
And behave yourself after that.
So, I mean, I don't have too many questions left, but this is one I just thought of. We're talking about, like, disciplinary stuff. So, how do you think, did rural parenting have a distinct difference from the way that parenting was in, because I know there is definitely a difference between parenting, now as opposed to generations past, but do you think it's more of a generational thing, or like was parenting different in a rural family than in a family that would live in Bangor or something?
What do you think, Mom? Did you ever get spankings? Did you guys ever get spankings?
No.
No spankings?
No.
Your mother and father never spanked?
No.
Your
you
brother?
Didn't either. You
no,
stand
I,
in that's your corner.
I had
that's
to stand
Peter's
in the corner.
Corner, and that's Diane's
yeah.
corner.
Yeah, but Diane never stood in the corner. I was always in the corner.
Diane would.
One thing I'll tell you is teaching. When I first went into teaching, you could, if a kid was disrespectful, you could get his attention awful quick and smarten him up.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing, you know, not hitting or anything like that, but you could take a kid out in the hall and have a stern talk with him, and he didn't want to mess around with that. You know, I mean, and I had teachers that you did not, you just knew that you were not going to be disrespectful to, because they could grab a hold of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And nowadays, and I got to admit, as a teacher, I used to get their attention. I used to, you know, disrespect or something.
When you had Fran Cook for teacher,
yeah.
and she said, just because I'm a relative, don't think you got to get away with anything.
Yeah.
I'm a teacher.
Yeah. But teachers, that you go back and you think of some of the teachers, and at the time, I can remember disciplining some kids, and they would look at you like they hated you, and they did. And they, but then years later, I'd hear from them, they said, that was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that time you grabbed me, took me out in the hall, and went nose to nose with me, I still remember that.
Yeah.
And and I needed that. Kids know. Kids will push you just as far. They're testing all the time.
Yeah.
That's the way I feel. And then that discipline is missing nowadays. A lot of parents don't have it. And a lot of parents, like when I was teaching, less than 50% of the kids that were in my class had both parents in the house. And I think it's even less than that now.
Yeah.
Divorce was common then when I was teaching, and now it's even more, it's more and more, it's so much more common.
Well, and the other thing is, I mean, well, my mom's a teacher, and
Where does she teach?
Vine Street in Bangor.
Oh, okay. His mom's a teacher.
And so it seems to me that it used to be more like if a kid does something wrong, then the parents get involved and it's the kid's fault. And now, if the kid gets disciplined or something, the parents want to blame the teacher.
Absolutely.
And I think that is the problem.
Yeah.
But do you think that is that sort of a generational change, or do you think that has anything?
Everybody's litigation. People are so afraid of litigation nowadays and saying the wrong thing politically incorrect or something. Mm-hmm. And then the kid tells the parent, and the parent, you know, it's going to cause trouble for the teacher, and the teachers are so, I mean, I'm glad I'm not teaching now. The last year that I taught, we had got a couple of bomb scares, okay? So the superintendent says, okay. And what he did is we would have a lockdown. So in the morning, the kids had to come in through the front door. It was the only way you could get in the school, and this is high school. And they had a wand. They had to be checked with a wand, and I was on that duty. Two times a week I had that duty. We had three different teachers have them come through, check backpacks. Can you imagine that? Checking like the wand, like you go through an airport.
Yeah.
And the kids would come in, locked down for the day. They couldn't come in or out. Nobody could come into that school without passing through an armed guard that was out front. And if there was a bomb scare, they'd just keep it on going because they knew nobody had been able to get inside to put a bomb in there.
Mm-hmm.
So but to me, when they start patting people down and checking packs and stuff like that, that was in Weston, Maine. I said, well, you know, I think I've had about enough of this.
Yeah.
And teachers have so much more paperwork. Everything has got to be documented, and it's just, you know, teachers are very important, and they've got, and their hands, one arm's tied behind their back. Like you say, you send a kid home. I was lucky enough, so the parents backed me up,
because
I started in that early time when parents still did, and then I started having the parents. I had their kids would come up through. The parents would have kids. You know, they'd graduate and have kids, and then they'd start coming. Watch out for Mr. Perkins, okay? Watch out for the coach, because I tell you what, he's not going to fool around. So that fear was still there.
Yeah.
And, well, respect or fear, or whatever you want to call it. But, no, I was fortunate. And I feel bad that parents need to support the coaches and the teachers. I mean, there's always a bad apple out there, but most teachers are doing that because they enjoy working with young people.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents, if they get the type of kid that they think they never did anything wrong, it's always somebody else's fault, then that kid is going to have some problems in
life. Couldn't have been my kid. My child wouldn't do anything like
that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And you know that. And your mother must tell you.
Yeah.
You know, I got a lot of respect for teachers, boy. I'll tell you what. Your mama, I didn't know she was a teacher, but for her. I got an appointment for mom coming up. You probably already heard that, right?
Yeah, so I was actually done anyways. The only last question I had for either of you is if there was any particular story or anything that you think would be, it could be amusing or just something that you learned from but like a rural story, if there's anything that was like, that sticks out in your mind as something that, a story you'd like to tell from your rural life and on the farm.
But I can remember when I was like 12 or 13, I had a 22, and I used to go out and I'd do some target practice and stuff, and I used to shoot starlings. You know what a starling is? It's a bird,
mm-hmm.
and I used to call them dirty birds, because what they do is they'll go out and they'll destroy the nests of other good birds, and they'll make that their nest. So anyway, one of my things I did is shoot starlings. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Do you know what a starling is now? It's a black ugly bird, but it's, well, you know, anyway, you can look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Ask Google.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I remember it was getting towards dark, and I used to keep track. I'd keep on a calendar how many starlings I shot every day around the farm. I was looking on this. There was a big line that went. It had the electricity. It went from the house down to the barn, and my dad had just gone down, and he had the milking machines going, and I saw a starling, and it landed on that line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it was getting touched. I'll pick that starling off, and then I'll go help with the barn. Anyway, I shot, and I saw this, pew, like that. And I said, oh, I think I got him. And then I looked down at the barn, and the lights were off.
Oh.
All the electricity in the barn was gone.
Oh, man. So you hit the wire. And
so what I did is I had gone right through the wire, and so all of a sudden, I heard my dad, and I think, Gerald, what's going on? Because he had heard the shot, I guess. And anyway, I can remember I lost the 22 for about a year for that year. Because that was the only sole line to the electricity down the barn. So anyway, I kind of raised the devil a little bit as a kid. And so that was one of the things that I think I stood in the corner for that one too. But I mean, that was a bad thing to do. It was stupid.
Oh, that's funny though.
So, because I thought I got him, then I looked down out of the corner of my eye and the lights that had just come on, and of course all the milking machines, we only had two milking machines, but all the electricity down to the barn. So I think we had to milk the cows by hand that night. And have you ever milked a cow?
I have before, but not very much.
See,
like,
that's another thing I think I got. See my wrists?
Uh-huh.
I got good, powerful wrists. I remember we had to milk cows from time to time anyway, but milking 30 head of cattle by hand as opposed to using a milking machine is a lot of work.
Yeah.
And especially with getting lanterns and everything, because we didn't have electricity down there. So anyway, that was something. Go ahead, Mom. You tell a story.
I am gonna. I don't remember all these things, Gerald.
All I remember is I'd come into the house and they'd say, okay, Gerald, get over in the corner. And I said, what did I do? Just get over there. You know what you did. Lots of times I couldn't even figure. I just knew I'd done something.
So if you don't have a story or anything, that's absolutely fine. But is there anything through this conversation that you may have thought of that you'd like to add before we end, or anything, or like about your life and or your life in general, or your life in rural Maine?
Well, I don't know. I was very fortunate. I had a good life.
And you still do.
And I still do.
That's right.
Well,
I was just going to say, every day we get up, it doesn't matter what it looks like down here, rain, snow, sun, we just think it's beautiful. We love living down here. I love living down here in the woods.
Yeah.
Even though it's hard to find. Yeah. But now you know where it is.
Now I do, yeah. Maine is a beautiful place.